You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
If you were listening to the station on the morning of September 11, 2001, it was Mark Hyland who was bringing you the news of what was happening that day. He was the host of Morning Edition on WNYC then, and he's currently a news anchor at 1010 Winds. He joins us now along with Larry Ingrassia, who on September 11, 2001, was the money and investing editor of The Wall Street Journal, where he'd worked since 1978. He and a team of editors and reporters put out the paper that day, and that issue won the Pulitzer Prize. These days, he's the Business Day editor at the New York Times. We thought we would find out what 9/11 was like for them as journalists working under great stress and the lengths that they and many reporters went to that day to bring us news of what was happening. And I'm very pleased to welcome you both to our show. And by the way, we invite listener calls at 646-829-3985, or you can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. Mark, how long had you been on the air before the first reports of the attack came in?
Morning Edition at the time started at 5 o'clock in the morning, and the first reports came in, shortly before 9 o'clock, right? So I was at the station for a good, long time,
four hours. It was a primary day. Was that the big story?
It was, indeed. Everybody expected the primary to be the lead story of the day, even though, as we know, most primaries are not very well attended by the voters. But that was the big story of the day because there was a mayoral election.
And I actually had gone to vote and was on the way to the office watching what was happening in the World Trade Center. So when did you first find out about it? How did the reports come to you?
I first found out about it in a rather physical way. I felt the building shudder, and I wasn't sure what it was. I thought, we're on the 25th floor of the Manhattan Municipal Building at the time, and I thought, I wonder if one of the satellite dishes fell over, or I wonder if an air conditioning unit has fallen off of its perch. What was that shudder? And within seconds, one of the FM music hosts, Steve Sullivan, I think was his name, came running in with his arms in the air saying, a plane has just crashed into the World Trade Center.
And you didn't
believe
it. That's
how I heard about it. Here's the thing.
But the studio had no windows. You couldn't go and look.
Well, there really isn't much you could see outside of the studio windows because they were covered up at the time by soundproofing. But the newsroom had windows, and just as an aside, there's a window in the old newsroom that I looked out every single morning for 10 years to check the weather. And the only thing framed in that window were the World Trade Center towers. So when I looked out that window, that's all I saw, the sky and the World Trade Center towers. So when he told me that a plane had crashed into the towers, I knew exactly where to go.
And the weather reports were still wrong most of the time. Larry, what about you? When and how did you find out what was going on?
Well, I was on my way into the office. I think I had voted that morning, and so it was maybe around 8:45 or 9 o'clock. I live in Park Slope in Brooklyn. And I remember very distinctly, everything is like crystal clear from that morning. And parts of it are a blur, but, kind of that period was really is still crystal clear. At the Wall Street stop, as I was getting off the car, I actually smelled something, and I thought, do you want to say something is burning? Because then people are going to freak out. So I didn't say anything. I walked up the stairs and I saw that there were flames on the top of one of the two of the Twin Towers.
And the Wall Street Journal's offices were across the street.
Yes, it was diagonal from the world, the Twin Towers. My first instance is this is going to be a busy day. There's a fire in the world. Trade Center, and so I usually walked past it on the way to the journal's office, but on this particular day, because of the fire, I kind of walked south of it, and it was there were a lot of people milling about. Nobody was exactly sure, at least that I heard from, what had happened. When I finally got across the West Side Highway, a guy came up to me and said, "They did it again," and I said, "Who did what again?" He said, the terrorist attacked, they flew a plane into the World Trade Center. And I was like, how does he know that? And he wasn't able to explain. And so I kept walking toward the journal office. And at this point, I was probably about a block away from the general office, maybe. So it's like two blocks away from the Twin Towers. And I heard this loud roar. Because of what the guy had said to me, I thought maybe the Air Force has scrambled some jets. Instead, in the instant of a second, you know, kind of there was a slam of a plane. It was the second, you know, jetliner running into the other tower. And at that point, I realized, you know, yes, there has been, there's something going on here. I kept making my way to the office, but when I was, you know, kind of just about to the office, people were evacuating the journal office.
One reporter told me that she'd taken her shoes off and had to run out of the building in her stocking feet.
Yeah, there were a lot of journal people who had just arrived and were actually leaving. And in fact, I ran into Paul Steiger, then the managing editor of the journal, outside the office. And he suggested me, he said, look, he said, why don't you get across the river to Jersey City, where Dow Jones Newswires has an office, and organize our coverage from there. He says, I'll try to find all the reporters in the area and start organizing them, kind of get them directed to doing things. And so then I started my way over to the boat basin to catch a ferry.
And the ferries were still running at
the ferries were still running. You know, it was, in fact, I thought I might have a hard time getting on to the ferry because you figured everybody's going to be trying to get out. In fact, so many people were transfixed by what happened, and they were standing and watching, you know, kind of what was going on. And people were jumping off, you know, kind of from the Twin Towers. We're still at the point where they're both standing and on fire. But I knew I'd really, you know, kind of was focused on getting on a ferry, getting across. So I got on the ferry. It turns out I was on one of the last two ferries, I think, to get across the river, because when my ferry got docked on the other side, I heard a big sound. I turned around, and that was the first of the towers coming down.
And how much of the staff was able to get across to Jersey City?
Well, I don't think all that many. I mean, I think
because you had to still put out
people,
a newspaper.
You know, kind of one of my, you know, colleagues, Tara Parker Pope, who was at the Journal at the time and is now at the Times. She also was stuck in Lower Manhattan. She eventually made it home, but I think it took like 12 hours to get back to Brooklyn. But I was, you know, kind of, there weren't that many people, but there were, in fact, you needed a lot of people in Manhattan to do reporting, but it was good that there are some editors that managed to get it across the river and started to, but they were evacuating the Dow Jones Newswires at that time in Jersey City because nobody knew what was coming next. Remember, I mean, there was like mass confusion.
Well, I had come to my office and started work when I was told to evacuate the municipal building. I just stood outside the building waiting for word on what to do, and when none came, I gave up and walked home across the Manhattan Bridge watching the towers burn. I wanted to do something, but I felt a sense of uselessness. You guys at least could do stuff. Mark, what happened in the newsroom? Who stayed there? Were there other reporters?
Well, it's a good question because the studio in so many ways is so cocoon-like. You're not exactly sure what's going on around you unless people actually come into the room or you go to them. And it was fairly early in the morning, and I wasn't exactly sure how many people were in yet when this happened, but there weren't many. There were other things going on in other parts of the building. We were on multiple floors at the time, and we had the same thing. We had an evacuation order, and I was like, no way. I'm not leaving. There's an open mic in this studio, and we've got the story of the century out here, and I'm not going anywhere. But people did leave, and for, you know, very good reasons, you know, I'm sure.
Well, I had
most
no choice
people,
in the matter.
You know,
I wanted
people
to say.
Weren't,
I thought
useless.
I was going to do a radio show.
Yeah, whatever. And I eventually, after threat of actually losing my job, walked downstairs. And as soon as I hit the sidewalk, the first tower came down. So I snuck back in the building and went back upstairs and stayed until the next morning.
That long?
Yeah.
And were you getting most of the information from NPR, from Washington?
We're getting a lot from NPR, but if you remember the coverage there, they weren't quite sure what was going on for a while. We one of the biggest problems on 9/11 was the loss of our ability to communicate. We lost the AM station. The FM station sounded like a phone line, I think, at that time. We were really on strings and bubble gum. And
well, we lost the transmitter on the World Trade Center
right,
for the FM station,
yeah.
So they had kind of
rigged it together.
Something together at the Empire State Building.
They were brilliant about that. And what happened was we would get calls from reporters. If we could get them on the air, we got them on the air, but there was very sketchy telephone communications. And sometimes people would some of the reporters I remember recorded what they saw, and then they got that recording to the station, you know, a few minutes later, so we could at least hear what was going on, even if it was a few minutes later.
Well, things were happening so fast.
Indeed.
And I suspect a lot of the things you heard were turned out to be incorrect. Yeah. Larry?
Well, you know, there was the first thing that you do, it's logistics. I mean, you need to get set up so that you can cover things. And for me, after kind of going to the office of Dow Jones Newswires, and that was being evacuated, there was a bit of a caravan that then headed down to South Brunswick, New Jersey, where the Wall Street Journal has a major printing plant and also back office stuff. It took about an hour to get down there. Fortunately, everybody there was already in action, and they had set up a temporary newsroom with a handful of computers so that people could start kind of calling anybody they could reach. We had the same problem that you did, Mark, reaching people. In fact, you know, kind of on the way down to South Brunswick in the car, trying to call people, reaching nobody, but finally getting through to Alan Murray, who was the Washington bureau chief of the journal at the time. And, you know, kind of he said, okay, there's been an attack down here too. You know, when you get down, and we kind of started talking about what we wanted to do. Meantime, Paul Steiger went back home, you know, kind of in you know, kind of Manhattan, met with a bunch of editors in somebody's office, somebody's home, and that was how things started getting organized. But yeah, there was mass confusion trying to figure out what happened and how we were going to put it all together.
And tone is an important part of reporting. You probably didn't want to incite fear and panic in listeners and readers, but at the same time, the attacks were very scary. I want to play a little clip. This is somewhere around, I think, 11 o'clock, where you're recapping the what you knew had happened so far, Mark.
This is WNYC AM 820 and online at WNYC.org. I'm Mark Hyland. It's 11:32. We are bringing you as many details as we can about the tragedy this morning, the apparent terrorist attack in Lower Manhattan at the World Trade Center and other attendant apparent terrorist attacks elsewhere. This is a timeline of the events, just to bring you up to date. A plane crashed into one of the towers at the World Trade Center in Lower Manhattan shortly before 9 o'clock this morning. And then a second plane crashed into the second tower at the World Trade Center shortly after that. The president, George Bush, was in Sarasota, Florida, and he called the crashes, quote, an apparent terrorist attack and a national tragedy. An aircraft then crashed near the Pentagon, just outside of Washington, D.C., in Northern Virginia, about an hour after these apparent attacks in New York. Government buildings in Washington, including the Capitol and the White House, were evacuated, with officials citing a credible threat of a terrorist attack. The FAA shut down all aircraft takeoffs nationwide. Shortly after 10 o'clock this morning, One World Trade Center, one of the two tall towers, collapsed about an hour after being hit by that first plane. American Airlines said one of the planes that crashed into the Trade Center was an American Airlines Flight 11, hijacked after takeoff from Boston en route to Los Angeles. We now know from American Airlines that there were two planes, both American Airlines flights, both hijacked. Both ended up crashing into the World Trade Center towers. Senior law enforcement officials say a car bomb exploded outside of the State Department of Washington, D.C. Federal Protective Services later denied that a car bomb attack occurred. Financial markets suspended trading in the wake of the attacks. Officials at Somerset County Airport in the southeastern area of Pittsburgh in western Pennsylvania reported a large plane crash there. That happened about 10 o'clock this morning. And then at 10:28, the second tower of the World Trade Center collapsed. A fourth explosion rocked the collapsed remains of the World Trade Center at about 10:38. Authorities across the country have gone on alert, tightening security at strategic facilities and evacuating high-profile buildings. U.S. monuments and museums in Washington, D.C. are closed. The Securities and Exchange Commission says all financial markets are closed for the day.
That was pretty accurate description of what had happened. The only thing you didn't know was who had orchestrated the attack.
Right.
We'll come back and talk more about what happened on that day.
I have to say, though, Leonard, because this was a very descriptive snippet of sound, I must say that my major regret over the course of the last decade is the fact that what I didn't do was get the world's longest microphone cord and go out onto the roof and describe it from there. So I could tell people actually what I was seeing as opposed to what had occurred. And that's certainly equally as important. But
My guests are Mark Hyland, who is currently a news anchor at 1010 Winds. He was the host of Morning Edition on WNYC on September 11, 2001. And Larry Ingracia, who was the money and investing editor at the Wall Street Journal on that day. He is now at the New York Times, the Business Day editor there. We'll continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. We're back with Larry Ingracia, who was the money and investing editor at the Wall Street Journal on September 11th. He'd worked there since 1978, and the newspaper that staff put out won a Pulitzer Prize that day. He is now with the New York Times. Mark Hyland was the host of Morning Edition on WNYC and stayed reporting on what happened until early in that morning. He's now a news anchor at 1010 Winds. Did you have the internet? Did you have how much internet access did you have in those days anyway?
Yeah, that's true.
There were no smartphones.
Yeah, that's very true. Very little in the way of ability to communicate. We were lucky to have the wires, Associated Press. That was great. We had very sketchy telephone service. The TVs were in and out. When you're, again, in the studio and you're tied to it because you're controlling it, in those days we did not have what we lovingly call a board op around here. I also had to operate what equipment was still working. And so the story, in essence, had to come to me through those communication, you know, outlets.
But phones, for example, were disrupted downtown because all the phone lines were under the World Trade Center.
Not as many people as today had BlackBerries, but there were a number of reporters who had BlackBerries. And BlackBerry service was the one thing that stood up. And so we were able to get files from people with BlackBerries who were downtown and filing. You know, other people reported and then went home and from their home internet, you know, addresses would send stuff in. It was, and
is that the
rare people
who
could get
away. Together?
It was a lot of that, and it was, you know, kind of those types of files, snippets here and there. I mean, one of the things that the Journal did, in addition to reporting to what happened, was clearly the Twin Towers were the home of a lot of financial companies, and we, you know, kind of made a point of quickly finding out, you know, what were the main companies that were on those upper floors, and then trying to get whatever information that we could about them, and had a pretty comprehensive list of the companies that were there and kind of where the most deaths were. And obviously that was a, you know, kind of a hard thing, a tragic thing to do, but, you know, it was something that people, you know, kind of wanted to know because that was part of the Wall Street community, a big part of the Wall Street community.
And you think that's the reason you won the Pulitzer Prize for that?
I think it was the overall you know, kind of effort, kind of painting this picture of what happened there broadly. It was that, but also, you know, kind of it was a really nice, one of my colleagues and editor, the foreign editor, John Bussey, actually stayed in the office longer than anybody else, wrote a first person account kind of looking at it from, you know, the World Financial Center building across the street where the Journal offices were. You know, what you find in times like this, and you know, kind of most praise to the police and firemen who were there and did their jobs. I mean, it's really, you know, amazing to see people focus on what they needed to do and to go out and report and tell. And it was really gratifying as a member of an organization to see everybody pull together and, you know, kind of put together this pretty amazing report under the most difficult of circumstances.
But as Mark suggested earlier, there's a certain amount of irony in all of this. We never want something like this to happen. And yet, if you're a journalist, these are the moments when you feel that you really have to do your best.
First thought when I saw the gash in the World Trade Center tower was, that explains the shutter. We have a new lead story. That was my first thought.
We remind you that you can give us a call if you want to. Our number here is 646-829-3985, or you can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. This week, the White House issued some guidelines for marking the 10th anniversary of 9/11, specifying that the story is not just about us, that it was a global event, and extremism is a global problem. Is this something you were mindful of at the time as you were covering the story in the days and weeks that followed, as New Yorkers and journalists?
I remember the one thing that I remember about the 1993 attack on the World Trade Centers that stays in my mind and just popped out of it again when the towers were hit was James Fox, who was the head of the FBI Bureau in New York. I interviewed him shortly before he retired, and he said, they will do it again. And he was so confident, and he was so sure, and he said it with such emphasis on, they will do it again. They will hit us again. It has stayed with me, and it was one of the first things I thought when the towers were hit.
And, Larry, you've written about how you associate 9/11 with the kidnapping and murder of your Wall Street colleague, Wall Street Journal colleague, Daniel Pearl.
Yeah,
For a while, there was no understanding that there was an Afghan or an al-Qaeda connection.
You know, the amazing thing is when you think of the Wall Street Journal being so close to the world, to Twin Towers, people were walking, through the lower level of the Twin Towers when the attacks occurred. There were people on the street all around it. There were no injuries of Wall Street Journal people from that attack. So that was amazing, and we were amazingly fortunate. And then several months later, we had this, great tragedy where Danny Pearl, our South Asia correspondent, was reporting in Pakistan and, kind of was kidnapped and murdered. And, when you ask, was it more than a story about, New York? Yes, and that brought home to us in a very, difficult, sad way, what this was all about. Kind of for a lot of us, I think, it's hard to get that memory out of our minds.
And now you work at the New York Times, and in March, reporters Anthony Shadid and Stephen Farrell and photographer Tyler Hicks and Lindsay Addario were kidnapped there. Are there ways to prepare for or to cope with these kinds of threats?
Well, first of all, I think, as Mark said, we're journalists. We want to find out what is happening and explain to the world what it means. And you can't do that without being out in the field, talking to people, being in the midst of the action. And sometimes they're dangerous places. You can take precautions, but you can never take a precaution against anything. Even the most experienced journalists, those who are the most careful, can occasionally be caught in spots where they, just where it's the wrong time, the wrong place. Most of us feel that, it's worth the risk to try to tell the story because these are issues that are affecting our everyday lives and kind of help people understand what's happening and why.
My guests are Larry Ingracia of the New York Times Now and Mark Hyland of 1010 Winds Now. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. A listener in Queens wrote, I too was on my way back from voting in the primary that when I learned of the attack. Has anyone checked how many people thankfully came to work late because they had voted in the primary that day?
I remember running down the numbers of the people who on any given day, the number of people who on any given day worked in the World Trade Center towers, and it was something like 50,000. And I was thinking to myself, my gosh, is everybody at work? It's almost 9 o'clock. What kind of casualties are we going to have? I don't know how many people may or may not have lived or died based on voting that day, but there's any number of things that people did that day that
and
kept them from getting there
late
on time. Yeah, they were just late.
Let's take a call from Helene from Manhattan. Hi, Helene, you're on the air.
Hi there. I work for NBC News, and my partner Craig White and I were, when we heard that the towers hit, we got in our crew car and went straight down Broadway. We pulled the car over at Duane Street because if we didn't, we probably would have ran over people who were kind of walking at us in a ghost-like, coming out of like a fog.
And many of them were covered by white powder.
They were. They were covered by white powder. We hadn't quite gotten what was happening when kind of like a ball of smoke came up Broadway at us. We kept going towards the tower. And as we got towards, we made our way to Chambers Street, I think, and Greenwich. And Craig White, the cameraman, the two of us were outside, and we actually shot the last shot. It reminded me of the Wicked Witch of the West, the hat melting, as the second tower came down with the antenna on it. And it literally just caved in. We were like maybe 3 or 4 blocks from it, or what it seemed like 3 or 4 blocks. We were surrounded by firemen, and at the last second, we actually got the shot as the rumble started coming at us.
Helene, were you scared?
I don't think I was scared. I just remember being just, I just couldn't believe what was happening. And it was like, I mean, I've been with a lot of horrific things happening in front of me, because that's what you do when you're in a camera crew. And some stupidly, you feel like you're away from it. So we got it as it was coming down, and the last thing I remember is like Craig turned around and he goes, "Now," and we just, all of us just dove into a delicatessen that was open, and the door shut behind us, and black smoke came up, and we were covered in complete blackness.
Can I say something about the dust?
Sure.
I'm sorry, but you brought up people covered with dust. We were basically in the relative safety of the radio station for 24 hours, but the next morning we had to move our operations up to Midtown to the National Public Radio Bureau up there so we could do Morning Edition from up there. So I was so reluctant to leave the frozen zone. But my car was downstairs. I had to be on the air, go up to Midtown. I go downstairs, and I see my car covered with a film of a dust. And that was the first time in the first 24 hours of this story where I got a bit of a chill, because I was wondering, what's in that dust? Because what's in the dust?
You know, my reaction was, when I saw the towers come down in particular, was a great fear for my colleagues, because I had left a lot of them standing within a few blocks of the towers. And when you're across the river and you see the expanse of it coming down, you don't know, you know, you couldn't tell that it actually just pretty much came straight down. It could have fallen in one direction or another. And those towers were so tall that if they had fallen in the wrong direction, anybody in their path would have been killed. And so that was
the fear.
That was one of my great concerns, is, oh my God, I've gotten across the river, but are my colleagues okay?
It's so interesting you should say that, because when I was standing down on the sidewalk after evacuating the building for a few minutes and the first hour started to come down, you may remember the top of the building did sort of tilt to the side just a bit before it collapsed straight down. And I remember there were people around me, and virtually all of us took about 3 or 4 steps backward as if it was coming at us. And then it came down.
Well, Helene, something that you said reminds us that reporters just go into reporting mode despite being faced with danger. Some people like Chris Hedges have talked about just how exciting that is, the adrenaline factor. Is that something that happened with you?
You know, I don't really remember. All I remember is that it's just like, this is what we do, and there was no, this is what we had to do. It was like time was standing still. You kind of look at everything through black and white, in a way. And the person I was with, I've been through so many things with him. I had utmost faith. If he said we were going to be okay, I knew we were. So as crazy as that sounds, I didn't really think the building was going to tilt over. I didn't think anything. I thought we were going to just be fine. And, of course, we were. But it is that mode you get into where you're just, you know, everyone is running away and you're running towards it. And you don't think twice about it. You just do it.
Thank you so much for calling us.
Okay, thank you for your show. It's terrific.
Larry, you mentioned that the Wall Street Journal moved its operations to its campus near Princeton, New Jersey for quite a while. How long before they came back to their old location?
Well, there were two portions of that. So it took a few weeks till we got a temporary space downtown around 6th and Grand. And that's where we moved the reporters and the editors to whom reporters worked for. So that was probably, you know, about half the newsroom. But the copy editors and a lot of editors for months and months and months, like, you know, kind of 6 to 8 months, still were commuting back and forth. You know, we got a bunch of hotel rooms and everything, but set up this much more elaborate newsroom in South Brunswick near Princeton. It was difficult. It was difficult. There was a lot of stress on people on top of everything else that was going on. But again, I think it's amazing, you know, the ability of people to cope with difficulty and tragedy, especially instincts kick in, you know, when you're a journalist. But it's not just a journalist. I think a lot of people's instincts kick in. I mean, the firemen, their instinct was go to save people. And some of them died as a result.
Now, none of us had ever experienced anything like that before. So when I stood there watching all of this happen from outside the municipal building, I was just somebody who was stunned to be observing this. I wasn't thinking, oh, gee, this is like that other time I had to face a life-threatening experience.
A number of books have been written, by the way, by that include accounts by journalists, and it's really quite interesting to me how many of them were willing to admit, even in the chaos of all of this, what do I do next? Mm-hmm. Where's the story? What do I do? What do I say? And yet the stories were all around them. And I don't know whether that's shock or whether there's just too many decisions to be made, but eventually it gets done.
And we also didn't know who had perpetrated mm-hmm. this terrible act. You both live and work in New York City. How would you say 9/11 changed the city? Have we pretty much returned to a post 9/11, a pre 9/11 mindset?
I would say pretty much. I don't think people walk around and think about if there's going to be another terrorist attack. I do think
they did for a long time.
They did for a while. They did for a while. But I think security in most buildings is much tighter than it was before 9/11. And you can't get into most buildings, office buildings in New York, without kind of going through extra levels than you did before. And I think that's one of the main kind of day-to-day differences that I feel.
Although that has nothing to do with flying an airplane into a building.
Well,
I think it's a little bit connected. I think it's going to concern about, you know,
yeah,
bad things happening.
Because it's what we see. Go down to Brooklyn outside the Atlantic Center and you'll see these huge oversized concrete blocks that are supposed to be protecting the rail station and whatever else is there. And you say to yourself, overkill? At this point, I don't know.
Or maybe somebody would be angry at Target.
Well, look, I think one of the most amazing things is there has not been a major terrorist attack. And, you know, we know what we don't know is, you know, kind of the extent that things have planned. And we know that things have been planned and the, you know, government has been able to intercept them. But, you know, 10 years on that there hasn't been.
Well, there are people who worry that the 10th anniversary might inspire somebody. Are you thinking about that?
I think it's an aspect that's worth thinking about, but it's not at the top of my list.
And I don't know that anybody has said to me, oh, I think I'm going to be, maybe it's best to be out of town on that day. I mean, I think that people have gotten on with their lives.
Well, yeah, I think that's a good point, because to tell you the absolute truth, I wanted to be out of town on the 11th, and I was just asked to work yesterday on the 11th. So
and remember, there were people who, especially those people who are living downtown, who left the city, who moved to Connecticut or New Jersey or whatever for a while, and some of them permanently. But a lot of people said, you know, look, I like living in New York City, and I'm going to come back to the city, and did. So I think it's amazingly little effect on everyday life in New York.
And many New Yorkers are annoyed that they were asked to leave for Hurricane Irene and were so little affected, while other parts of the country have been seriously affected. My thanks to both of you for being on our show today. Larry Ingrassia was the money and investing editor at the Wall Street Journal on 9/11. He is now the Business Day editor at the New York Times. Mark Hyland was the host of Morning Edition on the morning of 9/11 here at WNYC. He's now a news anchor at 1010 Winds. It's been wonderful talking with both of you.
Thank you, Leonard. It's been great to be here.
My pleasure.